This is Jay Sekulow. We've got breaking news. Photos are now released of the brutal attacker who beat two elderly pro-lifers in Baltimore.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Sekulow. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jay Sekulow.
Well, we've told you about the case involving two pro-life individuals that were involved in prayer vigils and sidewalk counseling. Never had any legal problems. Never had been cited for anything. Not blocking anything. Nothing. They've been doing this for decades. This was in front of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Baltimore, Maryland. They were brutally attacked by an individual who is out right now. They do not know who it is, although we have obtained the photograph. And this is kind of our own version of an all-points bulletin. I want to put it up on the screen for you, and then I'll describe to our audience. So this has been put up by the Crime Stoppers group in Baltimore. You see the guys and the two individuals on the bottom are our clients. They've been – one of them – well, both of them were severely hurt. Andy and I have seen the video, and we can't play it, but I will tell you it is breathtaking how bad this attack was. And the impact that attack has had on these individuals. Now, here's the question. Where's the Federal Bureau of Investigation? Where they were was when there were individuals charged with blockading an abortion clinic. They took the full power of the FBI, invaded these individuals' homes, the protesters, and charged them with federal crimes under the Free Access to Clinic Entrances Act, tried the case, which, by the way, the government lost. But where's the FBI here? So, Andy, first, the crimes that this individual committed in broad daylight go from assault and battery and worse. I mean, go ahead.
Well, I mean, you start with assault and battery. You go to very quickly elevated to aggravated assault. But in my estimation, at least as to one of the victims, it's an attempted murder, if not as to both. Because what he was trying to do was to kill them. And he tried to do it in a very violent way in the streets of Baltimore, without any remorse whatsoever, came up to these men, not being in any way caused by them to have any problems whatsoever.
Anything wrong? No.
Nothing whatsoever, and just starts beating up on them, kicking them in the face and head without any reason whatsoever. And it seems to me that if anything, I would have charged it as an attempted murder.
But the first thing you have to do is get the assailant. And that's what's in the process now. Now, we've got this out. The police are supposedly looking for this individual. It's Baltimore, so they've got a lot of crimes. That's part of the problem. But, Cece, I think it's important for people to understand is what these individuals, our clients, were doing was totally protected by the First Amendment. There is no question about that.
These are pro-life advocates, and they're older gentlemen. One was 73, one was 84. And they are in front of Planned Parenthood simply praying, simply talking to anyone who wants to engage in a conversation with them. They're peaceful advocates for life, offering women who are trying to make a choice, going into Planned Parenthood, they're trying to give them actually all the choices that you can keep the baby, that you can actually support life. These are peaceful gentlemen, like you said, who've been doing this for decades, and they were attacked. One of the gentlemen, the one that actually got knocked out, said he felt like he was hit by a truck. That's how hard he was hit. And then the other man.
Have you seen the video yet?
I did. I just watched it before I came in, and it is horrific.
Yeah, we cannot
I had
put
to
it
turn
yet,
my head because I couldn't watch it.
I mean, the brutality of this assailant is unreal. Now, we're going to stand and fight for justice for these two pro-life individuals. Now, we've hired private investigators to do all the things we can. We're going to find out who did this, and we will hold them accountable. Hopefully, the county will prosecute them criminally. We will go after them civilly because the criminal charges have to come from the government. But rest assured, we're going to fight this. By the way, talking about fighting for life, I'm holding my hand. Supreme Court of the United States. That's where we've taken our latest pro-life case, pending before the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ, folks. You see what we're doing. A civil case in Baltimore, a Supreme Court case in Washington, D.C. 800-684-3110. We encourage you to give us a call. And we got to fight, folks. There's no question about it. Back for more in a moment. of our clients in the Baltimore attack, and that's what I'm calling it, was taken to the trauma unit, shock trauma unit at the local hospital in Baltimore because the injuries were so significant. What was their crime? Nothing. They were peacefully on a sidewalk offering counseling and literature to individuals going into an abortion clinic. Pure First Amendment activities. And this guy, and again, I wish I could show you the video. We cannot yet. It is breathtaking what happens to this guy, the both of them. I said they've been there for decades. That's the individual. By the way, if you live in the Baltimore, Maryland, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, Virginia area, this is who we're looking for. And we've hired retained experts to help us do this. The police are looking as well. The problem is in Baltimore. This is the problem. Andy and I were talking about this before. They have their crime situation in Baltimore. And I used to live in Baltimore as a kid. And of course, it's only 30 minutes from Washington, D.C. But the crime in Baltimore is so significant that unfortunately, even this attempted murder, which I think is what it is,
yeah.
Andy, is not the highest profile. You represented as a DA these kind of cities.
Oh, absolutely. The, you know, unprovoked attacks like this on people. What, of course, Baltimore is facing, as every major United States city is facing, is a proliferation of violent crime. It's in Chicago, it's in Atlanta, it's in New York, it's in Portland, it's in any state, you know, you can think of in any city. They're looking at a proliferation of violent crime, and they prioritize it. If it's, you know, something that didn't result in death, then they don't look for you. But this is something that could have resulted in death, and it's especially heinous because it had a vicious provocation intent to it. Here, people praying in front of an abortion clinic for life, not for death. And what they get is death, practically. When someone comes around the corner huffing and puffing, and I've seen the video, and with a malicious intent in their mind, kicks someone in the head, knocks him down, viciously attacks him, takes his water bottle, and then just struts away.
If you were the charging attorney here, if you were the DA, and you looked at that video.
Yes.
Based on that video of our clients being attacked.
Yes.
What would you charge?
Attempted murder. Aggravated assault count one, attempted murder count two. That's what I would charge because what you were trying to do for no reason whatsoever was to kill these people for exercising their First Amendment rights.
You know, there are hate crime statutes that are involved in these. You would think the federal government, the FBI, would be doing an aggressive investigation here, but there is a double standard. If you're pro-life, you do not get the same justice as those that are opposed to life.
That's right.
And we see that in cases. We're seeing it in this case, but we've seen it in other cases, CeCe, including one we've got at the Supreme Court of the United States, where undercover reporters are charged with RICO, racketeering influence in corrupt organizations. You go after the mob for that, but this was going after individuals involved in undercover, protective, First Amendment media reporting. Investigative journalism, constitutionally protected.
Yeah.
That case is now before the Supreme Court of the United States. So we go from the county courts in Baltimore to 30 miles back down towards D.C., and we're at the Supreme Court of the United States. On the screen right now is a copy of the cert petition. That is our request for review in this case. I think there's a good chance the court will review this case, but there it is. I mean, we have filed a major case here. But there is, CeCe, two standards
absolutely
that exist, especially in the life arena.
Yeah, and we call it the abortion distortion, and it is still very much alive and well. I think a lot of people think the Dobbs case kind of put the end to the abortion battle, but it absolutely didn't, and abortion distortion is still alive and well. In this case that we just filed the cert petition, this is the case, I'll remind everybody, where undercover people had caught Planned Parenthood red-handed selling baby parts. Now, if that's not disgusting enough, I mean, it's heinous that they are talking about how much a brain will cost, how much, you know, whatever it is, they're selling baby parts, which is completely illegal. And instead of Planned Parenthood getting punished for that, guess who gets punished for that? The people that actually uncovered this illegal activity. And that is the double standard. That is abortion distortion.
Now, think about this. The individuals that were selling the baby parts, which in violation of state and federal law, get nothing. The individuals that reported that they did it and had it on tape undercover, they get charged. Think about that for a moment. And that goes back to the double standard here in this case involving these two individuals. You would think that this would be the FBI getting involved in this and beginning an immediate investigation, Andy.
Well, I mean, the FBI should have been on this the minute that it happened, and I don't see why not. Well, I do know, because the FBI is corrupt and politicized, if you really want to know. Metro Crime Stoppers offered a reward in this case. That's very good. That's a wonderful thing. But you know what the reward is, Jay? $2,000. Come on. We said it this morning, and you and I looked at each other in disbelief. $2,000 for an attempted murder victim? Well, where are you, Federal Bureau of Investigation, when this happens to people who are pro-life? Noticeably absent, disappear, gone, ghost, finished, not interested whatsoever. But if this had happened to a Planned Parenthood operation, they would be there. They would be there with all their force, with their guns and their SWAT teams. Not the case. That's the sad part of it.
Let me also say this. That, and Marianne Rumble brings this up. She said her brother lives in Baltimore and crime there is out of hand. So I don't want to taint the police here too much. They've got their hands full.
They do.
They are investigating. We've been assured they're investigating. Saying that, and then going back, that if you have, this is Eric on Rumble, says if you've got conservative values, you no longer get equal treatment. We're seeing that in so many different arenas. We're going to bring up a case later in the broadcast, which I still find, in the year 2023, amazing that we have these, where a student is told to carve an idol. I mean, literally an idol in the classroom. Now, we had the student case a number of years ago where in California they were requiring the students to not only learn about the five pillars of Islam, which would be fine in comparative religion course, but to then practice it. You take on a Muslim name, you bow down to Mecca, you pray five times a day. Could you imagine if they did that about Christianity or Judaism? Can you imagine the uproar by these groups? But no. Again, it's kind of like a protected status. What I'm trying to show you with all these cases is that the ACLJ, whether it is, as I said, at the Supreme Court of the United States or at a county, it'll be a civil case in Washington or Baltimore, Maryland for pro-lifers, or for students in Ohio, we're there. And we're there because you support the work of the ACLJ. We keep this broadcast on the air because of your support for the ACLJ. This is a great day to support the work of the ACLJ. Become a member. Just join the ACLJ at aclj.org. We encourage you to do that. That's how we fight for these cases. Now, these two individuals, Andy, you said something very significant here, and that is attempted murder.
Yes.
Let's describe again. Let me describe it. They were peacefully on a public sidewalk in the quarter of the street, protected areas for free speech. They're approached by an individual who then brutally attacks them in broad daylight. This is what happens. I mean, you saw the... this is gruesome. Do we have the photo available of our client? I mean, this, folks, I mean, I'll describe it for... I mean, it was shock trauma unit. That's enough. That's enough. Shock trauma unit. That's how bad his medical situation was. What's the process that goes on inside the police department?
Well, the process that goes on in the police department, it should... is that the photo of this person, which now everybody has and everybody knows, is put out on basically an all-points bulletin. Look for this person. Make it a priority issue. Find him. Now, I cannot imagine. This happened in May. Am I correct, Will? This happened in May. It is now June 12th today, and they haven't found him. I can't believe that. As we say in Georgia, someone ain't hunting him. And if you were hunting him, and you would have found him by now. There's no doubt in my mind that people who do these things are found within 1 or 2 days because you know who they are. The police know who performs these acts. This is common knowledge. This is known. Don't tell me it's not, because I know within the police community they know who these people are. Well, why don't you find him? Why don't you corral him, capture him, and bring him to justice as you should do? This is an attempted killer. This is not someone who just comes and pops someone in the eye or something like that. He kicks him. He knocks him down. He kicks him again. He takes his water bottle and he struts off as if nothing had happened.
The message the individuals were sharing was a pro-life message. Now, we're going to turn our attention from that series of cases, and we're going to have our senior counsel for global affairs joining us in the next segment of the broadcast, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, because Cuba's hosting a secret Chinese spy base focusing on the United States. UNESCO is now, the United States rejoins UNESCO. That's going to be a big issue. This was after we had already withdrawn. And you can ask yourself, how does this look for international global affairs? Cece, you're heading to the UN next month.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be there. We're actually doing a side event that our European Center for Law and Justice is hosting. And we keep all these issues front and center at the UN.
So we want you to support the work of the ACLJ. We've got a piece out on Israel. We have an office in Jerusalem, of course, as you know. We do a lot of work over there defending the Jewish state. Your support of the ACLJ is critical. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate is, of course, tax deductible. We encourage you to do that. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by our colleague, Mike Pompeo, Senior Counsel of Global Affairs. And I'm going to tell you something. Having people like Mike Pompeo as part of our team, I mean, think about that for a moment, folks. By the way, not the first cabinet member we have had, not the second. We've had three. John Ashcroft, Rick Grenell, and, of course, Mike Pompeo. So we've had a number. We're going to take your calls as well at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment. Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're joined now by our Senior Counsel for Global Affairs, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, former Director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Mike, very interesting. Late last week, Wall Street Journal reports that Cuba is going to host a secret Chinese spy base, so secret we now know, with a focus being on eavesdropping on the United States. So we've been watching the CCP, and you've been talking about this for a long time, ratchet everything up. I mean, spy balloons going throughout the United States. Biden administration shoots it when they get after they get all the data. Now we've got the situation purportedly in Cuba. Let's first talk about the Chinese threat, the CCP threat, the Chinese Communist Party. I remember years ago when you first were on this broadcast, after you had finished your tenure at Secretary of State, that you talked about like around the universities, these Chinese cultural centers. I mean, they've infiltrated every aspect of culture and society.
So, Jay, thanks for having me on today. Two things. One is you're right. This external threat, the spying from Cuba, the spy balloons, all the work they're doing in space today is very serious. It demonstrates Xi Jinping's global intentions. But the second point you make is a good one, which is not only are they doing these things outside of the United States, but it's affecting every American here at home. Not only are they buying land inside the United States at important sites near our military facilities, they're running police stations inside the United States. We had to shutter the consulate in Houston, Texas. They were running a huge spy operation from a diplomatic facility. We see what's going on in our universities, where the Confucius Institutes are impacting American citizens of Chinese descent, trying to shape the way they engage with the university system. These are all things that affect every American. They're not far away. This isn't off someplace. It's in your local town, in your community, at your local university.
When we talk about a spy base, that's what it's being referred to as, in Cuba, what does that mean? What does that look like?
So I've read the reporting. I don't know exactly. While they've said this happened in the Trump administration, it sounds like what's really going on there is nothing remotely related to what the Chinese have been doing around the world for years. But put aside, I'd always just, it's annoying when they try to blame someone else. They've been in office almost 3 years now, for goodness sake. But it doesn't matter. What they're trying to do is collect signals intelligence, being able to tell what's moving. Think about all of our military bases in the southeast part of the United States, watching equipment movements, watching training, seeing who's going in and out of the gates of the facility. All of those things are possible to do when you're up close, call it 80, 90, 100 miles away from the United States. You can collect important intelligence about American national security assets, who they are, what they are, where they're moving, and you can begin to develop a picture of how the United States would operate in a moment of conflict.
Is your sense, with as it relates to that, that the threat from China is unrelenting at this point? I mean, do you see them backing down under the current administration's policies?
Well, there'd be no data to support that theory. And we ought to listen to Xi Jinping. He has been very intentional about shaping the environment, talking about America in decline. That's why the work the ACLJ does is so important, right? Trying to protect the things that matter most here in America. That's what Xi Jinping is after. He wants us to turn on ourselves, to walk away from our traditions. And there is no evidence that what the Biden administration is doing to date is convincing Xi Jinping that he ought not do that. That is the deterrence model that we developed in our 4 years in office. Those 4 years of deterrence began to work. We still had a ways to go. But just like Vladimir Putin invaded Europe, I think Xi Jinping senses this may be his moment, and that creates an awful lot of risk of losing the very deterrence that keeps us all safe.
There are a few people that we could talk to that's actually have been in the room with Xi Jinping, the chairman of China, the president and premier of China, so to speak. I mean, really, it's a lifetime appointment these days. You've been in the room with him, with Chairman Xi. This guy's playing for real. I mean, this is not a game for him. This is a world dominance issue for them, correct?
100%. And he makes no bones about that. It's just about timing for him. How long is it going to take, and what's the most efficient way to deliver his ultimate objective? He talks about Chinese rejuvenation. He talks about the Middle Kingdom. This is ancient historical stuff, Jay, right? This is how he thinks about China's place in the world, and thinks that they have been shunted off of that by the United States for 75 years, and he's not about to let that happen for another 75 years. We can stop this. It's not inevitable, Jay, but it's just going to take a resolve and a seriousness to understand the risk, understand the threat, build out a team of people who care about human dignity and the basic rule of law. And in the end, much like Reagan described to the Soviet Union, we'll win and they'll lose.
You have an article up at ACLJ.org, Weak and Woke Won't Deter America's Adversaries. I reflect back on your tenure as Secretary of State and, of course, also as Director of the CIA, and how we had so much respect globally, and that our adversaries would be hesitant to start a war in Ukraine, to invade Taiwan, to send a spy balloon over the United States, or set a spy outpost in, you know, Cuba, 90 miles off the shore of the Florida Keys. Now, having said that, and you point this out in the article, is what is the deterrence for these enterprises from these governments right now under the Biden administration? I just don't see it.
Boy, and this is unfortunate, Republicans supported this too. I'm not sure that we're going to resource our military appropriately, but apart from the actual number, the amount of money the taxpayers spend on it, we're using it in ways that don't focus on the mission set. When you're spending so much time doing diversity and inclusion training, when you are thinking about, I want every military vehicle to be carbon neutral, these are things that the Chinese Communist Party says that's a military that's lost its focus. That's a national security apparatus that is thinking about things other than being prepared to fight and win wars. And when you do that, Jay, the other side thinks, you know, I just might be able to move. And so Putin certainly did in Russia. Excuse me, certainly did in Ukraine. And I watched what's taking place in the Middle East, too, where the Iranians are continuing to try and expand their effort to kick us out, to get Americans out of that place in a way that would put Israel at risk. These are things that lose the deterrence model that has been built over time. And boy, it's hard to get back, Jay, once you've lost it.
One other thing I wanted to discuss, and that is UNESCO. When you were Secretary of State, we pulled out of UNESCO, which is the UN Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. We do a lot of work at the UN. Why was it the right decision to pull out, and what's the mistake here that the Biden administration made by getting back in it?
So if you look at UNESCO's mission statement, you'd say, goodness gracious, that's all, you know, sunshine and butterflies, all good stuff. This was a deeply anti-Israel organization. I had snuggled up to the Palestinians. It no longer reflected America's value set, and so we left it. It looks like the Biden administration is going to re-enter that. Their claim is that China is beginning to have too much influence there. You watch. China will have more influence there as a result of U.S. taxpayer dollars underwriting UNESCO than it has even sitting here today. I have a model to protect American taxpayers from their money going to help the Chinese and work against our partner, our friend, our ally, the nation of Israel.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. Mike, we appreciate it as always. Mike Pompeo, of course, Senior Counsel for Global Affairs of the ACLJ. He talked about Israel. We've got an office in Jerusalem. Talked about the United Nations, our European Center for Law and Justice in Strasbourg, France. Also in goes to Geneva, of course, during the UN sessions. We're expanding our work domestically to impact the UN, because despite the fact that it's a hostile regime there in these governments in the UN, you've got to be there. You have to report for duty. It's called the Ministry of Presence. Sometimes you just have to be there. We've got another 30 minutes of this broadcast ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned. We've got a case out of Ohio. Folks, you can't make this stuff up. In a public school system in Ohio, what they're having these students do. We're going to talk about that. We've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to talk about some economic issues as well. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We'll also take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jay Seculo.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the broadcast. You know, I was thinking about this. Andy Economo, of course, with me here in the studio, senior counsel for the ACLJ. Look what we talked about in the first half hour of the broadcast. I mean, just in the first half hour, we talked about pro-lifers that were brutally attacked in Baltimore, Maryland, to the point where they were hospitalized in a shock trauma unit. We now know a photo of the individual, so that information is out, and we're gathering that to hopefully see an arrest, and then we will prosecute civilly. The county would prosecute criminally. Then we talked about, in the pro-life arena, we're fighting at the Supreme Court of the United States because an undercover journalistic effort produced a great result. We found out that what we expected was true. Planned Parenthood had been selling body parts of aborted children in violation of federal and state laws. And here's the interesting issue. Who gets prosecuted? The journalist who uncovered the crime. And they're charged with RICO. Racketeering, influence, and corrupt organizations. RICO. Now, Andy, I think about that, and you know, you've handled RICO cases. I've done three RICO cases at the Supreme Court. This is not where you see RICO.
No, no. Racketeering, influence, and corrupt organizations were intended to handle originally organized crime, and then has been expanded to almost everything in the world where you've got two predicate acts, which means two crimes that were committed that form a pattern of racketeering activity, such as obstruction of justice or murder or corruption of some kind. But this was not the intent of racketeering. But what we have done today is taken laws that don't apply to people who are pro-life and focused those laws on them. But when you have a case of attempted murder, in my estimation, as you had in Baltimore, what happens? Not criticizing the police. I know they've got a lot to do in Baltimore and in other big American cities. I understand that. I understand the workload on the police. But this man who committed this act, I saw it with my own eyes, on tape, should have been found by now. There is no excuse, and he should be prosecuted. Not the two people who were praying and trying to save lives, but the person who was trying to take a life.
All right, so then we talked about, with Mike Pompeo, our senior counsel for global affairs, the Chinese threat, including this spy facility in Cuba, which news shocked that the Communist Party in Cuba would be working with the Communist Party of China to spy on the United States. And what Pompeo said, what Secretary Pompeo said, was so important. It's to get info on our military bases in the southeastern portion of the United States. So we have got that threat. ACLJ involved in that. Then I want to talk to you about a case, and we're going to get more details later in the broadcast. A fifth grade student is instructed by their teacher, who's teaching social studies, to make what's called a kinchia doll, a religious doll that is a part of a native Southwest Native American religious ceremony. That would be one thing to learn about it. Okay, and then you make the idol. Then you were instructed to make the idol, name them, and describe that idol's spiritual powers. Now, I mean, think about in a public school in Ohio, all the separation of church and state, when anything that, you know, smacks of the Judeo-Christian tradition, it's out. But you can have this, and again, I'm not knocking anyone's beliefs. I'm knocking the fact that instead of just teaching about it, they make it a participatory event.
Look, there's nothing wrong with teaching about the religions of the world. I want to know about the religions of the world, but I'm not going to tolerate, and no one should tolerate, and ACLJ will not tolerate, the making of a Hopi idol. Basically, what he made was a Kachina doll, which is a Hopi idol, Southwest Indians, American Native American Indians, and then describe their spiritual powers, name them, and essentially worship them and intercede to them, you know, for the exercise of spiritual powers. Unbelievable.
I want to ask you, parents, if this was your child, what would your reaction be? We'll take your phone calls on that at 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. If your child was being taught these religious practices, like I said, they had the five pillars of Islam in California, but then you had to take a Muslim name and do Muslim religious worship services. How would you react to that? 800-684-3110 will take your calls. But the ACLJ fought back because people like you can go to aclj.org/help and get help. That's what happened here, and the ACLJ in that case in Ohio is at work. We'll be back with your calls, 800-684-3110 in a moment. Because the ACLJ, as diverse as we are on topics, where, like I said, Supreme Court of the United States on a pro-life issue, China and spying, the ACLJ involved, UN human rights issues, ACLJ involved, economics, the ACLJ involved. Harry Hutchinson, professor of law and economics, of course, senior counsel for the ACLJ is here. There was talk. I mean, I want to get kind of your take of the economy, Harry, because reports, contrary to what we saw this morning, now they're starting to leak out. Interest rates may again go up a quarter of a point. Where do you see the economy right now? How do you see it?
Well, I think the economy is in a middle course, or a middling course. I think it's important to keep in mind that most economists expect a recession, but many of the economists that I read, they expect the recession to be milder than they first expected. Well, and what does that mean? It means that there will be fewer job losses. It will also mean fewer individuals will default on loans and mortgages. And so that means that there is less risk going forward. However, it's important to keep in mind that the Federal Reserve, I believe, is of two minds with respect to raising interest rates going forward. There was some talk that they were going to pause interest rates for the month of June, but then resume the upward trajectory of interest rates later in the year. And I'm not necessarily sure, and I certainly am not willing to hazard a guess as to where the Fed will indeed go, but the jobs numbers are relatively robust, but it's important to keep in mind that since COVID, most of the job growth has occurred with respect to immigrants to the United States as opposed to Americans who've been here for quite some time. So
if you were trying to deal with this, I mean, I want to get very practical here with people. Job numbers are still great. I mean, no question about it. Stock market's pretty flat,
right?
Not dropping significantly. It goes up 79 points, goes down 70. It's bouncing around 33,000 is where it seems to stay. Unemployment's low. Inflation's still high, not as bad as it was 6 months ago. What would you do? Do you think the best thing to do at this point, if you had to come in now, not like if I could have done it a year ago?
Sure. I would probably pause interest rate increases probably for at least the next quarter, in part because the interest rate increases that the Fed has engaged in so far, they probably have not reach their full effect. So it's going to take some time. But I think the Federal Reserve has at least the tendency to overcorrect. So they were slow raising interest rates, and they will probably overreact with respect to inflation going forward. Because keep in mind, although the inflation has fallen from 9% last year to around 4%, that is still above the Fed's target interest rate of around 2%. So I think the Fed is likely to overcorrect, and that means raising interest rates.
What's interesting here is if you look at me, Andy, and Harry, we've been through a lot of economic cycles collectively. We've been through the inflation in numbers you can't even imagine, where interest rates for your home mortgage were 18% in the 70s. We were through the real estate crash of the late 80s under the Reagan administration. Of course, the economic crash of 2008, 2009 with the mortgages and almost into on the verge of a depression. And then, of course, the latest is this hype. Again, we're getting into a hyperinflation standpoint. The country is resilient, and we tend to bounce back. I sense right now, and you see this in the cities, and we all live in, we're in our studios here in a metro area, but we all live in different places as well. And real estate housing, Andy, is still very strong. So I know you're Atlanta. Now my sister sells real estate in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta's real estate market is still very strong.
It is very strong.
So we're not seeing the mortgage defaults. I'm just going to ask Harry about that in a moment. But it is still strong. I mean, the markets are still strong.
They are still strong, but I mean, I have seen in the last 2 years, for example, a line of credit from a major broker-dealer, which 2 years ago was 2%, and you wanted to borrow money for whatever reason you wanted to, is now 7.28%. Nonetheless, as you pointed out, the housing market in Atlanta, for example, is very strong in the area of larger homes and larger amounts of homes. And this is interesting because it's the resilience of the situation and in the country. But inflation still is high. Prices are high. Groceries are high.
Yeah,
gas is high. Petroleum is high. Things like that are nature. We need to drill. We're not drilling. We need to drill. The things like that are not happening.
So, Harry, you look at, we don't have the mortgage default that we saw in 2008 and 2009 that took us 5 years to get out of. We're not seeing that. If we get into a recession technically, I mean, a lot of people think we're already there, what would it look like?
Well, I think it would be a relatively mild recession, in part because the federal government continues to overspend. And federal spending has been one of the major factors leading to inflation. So you're not necessarily likely to see a shrinkage in employment. Why? Because the federal government is continuing to spend money, and they're spending money on defense. They're spending money on social programs. The Ukrainian war, for instance, is continuing to fuel defense contractors' profits. And right now, I don't foresee a peaceful outcome with respect to Ukraine in the foreseeable future. And as one analyst pointed out earlier, Russia is losing in Ukraine. Ukraine is losing in Ukraine.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a stalemate, and yet the West continues to pump more and more armaments and military supplies into this war, which is probably not winnable unless we are prepared to unleash nuclear weapons.
I can't imagine the situation where that, you talk about an economic collapse, it'd be a global economic collapse. Do you sense, this is another thing, Harry, Reagan famously talked about this, you know, this kind of malaise that was in the culture. Jimmy Carter talked about this, and then he had the new day in America. The current administration's policies, economically, seem to be always playing catch up. There's never a proactive moment. And listen, I fault Republicans for that too. Under George W. Bush, we have this economic collapse in 2008, 2009, and they didn't know it was coming. And it almost buried the country. We've had the bank defaults here in the United States in the last 3 months. That seems to have not been a contagion. Doesn't seem to be spreading, but it could have. Under Bush, it did. So I'm not blaming, it's not a Republican-Democrat thing. It's just, there just doesn't seem to be proactive work here.
Well, I think that's correct, but it's also important to keep in mind with respect to bank defaults in particular, that more bank defaults could indeed be coming, in part because this administration is prepared to back what? Green energy initiatives, and most of those initiatives are uneconomic. And so if you look at the collapse, the bank collapses that have occurred so far, the Silicon Valley Bank, First Republic, and Signature, all of those institutions were over-leveraged in what? Loans within the so-called green energy space. And many of those industries are uneconomic. And that was proven during the Obama administration. How many of us remember Solyndra and other failures? So the administration continues to pump money into sectors that are not particularly productive, but by focusing on green energy, we are literally helping the Chinese economy, because the Chinese economy is producing many of the so-called green energy devices.
Of course.
And we failed to admit that in order to produce solar panels, for instance, we have to use fossil fuels in order to produce them.
All right, next segment of the broadcast, last segment. I want to hear from you on this, 1-800-684-3110. Students in a school in Ohio are told to carve an idol, give the idol a name, and describe the idol's spiritual powers. Now, you're saying you can't make this stuff up. Like I said, if this was, you know, recite the Lord's Prayer, there'd be lawsuits flying left and right. Now, the ACLJ is involved. But I want to ask you parents, what would your reaction be if this was your son or daughter or your grandchild? Take your calls at 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Now, I will say, in this particular case, we've had a couple of school board members come out already in our favor, saying they were outraged at this. But, Harry, this is the problem going on in the schools across the country. It's not just Ohio.
Absolutely. Why is that? In part because the teachers' union continue to push a religious ideology, a non-Christian ideology.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We want your calls. 800-684-3110. If this was your child or grandchild, what would you want us to do? What would you say? 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ, Supreme Court of the United States, District Court in Baltimore protecting pro-lifers, students in Ohio, working at the United Nations against the Chinese Communist Party, and defending Israel. All of that is the work of the ACLJ. Go to ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment. Taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. So here's the situation. So it's a fifth grade class of social studies in Lexington, Ohio, public school there. A Kachina doll is a religious doll used by Southwest Native Americans. And learning about that would be fine and what they believe. And that's fine. I think that's good comparative religion, though those are good things. But here's what you happen. Students were instructed to make the dolls in class, name them, describe their special spiritual powers. We're talking about 10 and 11 year old kids here. Being forced to make idols in class. Now, there was about 5 years ago, it was more than that now, maybe 10 years ago, in California, they had a segment on Islam, the teaching of Islam. And that's fine. They talked about the five pillars of Islam. But then they had the students take a Muslim name, wear Muslim garb, participate in a Muslim religious exercise. We cried foul, church-state separation, as people like to argue. That was, you know, mandatory participation in a religious worship service. And, you know, we got that resolved, but it took ACLJ action. Now, we're representing these students in Ohio. But, Harry, you said before the break that this is not a Ohio problem. This is a national school problem.
Precisely. It's not only a national problem, it is becoming a global problem. So it's important to go back to 1920 and remember Alice Bailey. Who is Alice Bailey? She was the publisher of the Lucifer Publishing Company. She was very active in the New Age movement in England. And the United Nations dedicates its teacher's manual for Common Core education to Alice Bailey. Keep in mind, the Common Core curriculum has invaded the United States. So it's important to keep in mind that there has been a religious component attached to all of the revolutionary ideas coming from Marx, coming from Sigmund Freud, and coming from other sources, and they have now come to take our children.
All right, we're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Want your reaction to this. What would you do if you were the parents? 1-800-684-3110. Loretta in California has had some experience with this. Loretta, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call and sounding the alarm for all the parents and the children of this United States and the world. In saying that, my oldest son is almost 45, and this has been going on for a long time, this indoctrination. I was a single parent, and about 35 years ago in California, they came out with this series of impressions curriculum, which is exactly what you're explaining right now about what they're doing in Ohio.
Right.
They wanted the children, they wanted parents to supply incense, candles, and I started questioning why. And when I found out that they were having the children lay on paper and having another child draw around them their image and then trying to get them to get in touch with their spiritual guide, I sounded the alarm to other parents, let them know, tried to organize. But long story short, the muscle with the school was just too strong, and they told us, you're not going to win this. And I said, we need to get this curriculum out It's not productive.
Yep.
It's not anything that is, you know, it's, there's a separation between church and state. And I think that this is bordering. Anyway, long story short, I was the only parent and I was a single parent.
Yep. But you thought, but here's the key thing. You took your children out of school because you couldn't stand up to the school board. There was no ACLJ then. There is now. And Loretta, when these parents contacted us, Cece, we immediately went to work.
We absolutely did. And you know, what's so egregious here is that in the teacher's handout, she explains that these dolls were used to teach children about different spirits, not about different religions or world religions, as you said, Jay, which would have been an educational goal. She was literally trying to teach them about different spirits, which is exactly what our caller was talking about. They're after our children and to teach them about demonic spirits.
And interestingly, these school boards are accountable to their constituents, Andy. They're local school boards. Now, I need to say this about Ohio. A couple of those school board members have already come out in our favor saying, yeah, this is outrageous. So it's not like, I don't want to get the wrong impression. We don't have it resolved yet. But school boards are accountable to the parents.
I represented a school board in the metropolitan Atlanta area, and they are accountable to the parents. The parents have the voice. The parents should be heard. And the parents are not domestic terrorists, as the Biden administration would like to say, if they come up and oppose these kinds of idol worship and things of this nature. You've got to put your foot down. You've got to say, you can learn about religion. There's nothing about wrong about learning about Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism, Judaism, Christianity, Muslim, the Hopi Indians, or whatever. There's no problem with that. But when you start engaging with incense and idols and building images and worshiping the image and talking about the power that this stick has or this thing that you have carved has, you have transcended that. You have gone beyond that. You are now practicing a religion and indoctrinating your children. And the dictators said this years ago, give me the children for one generation and I will dominate the world.
Well, and the problem is, and this is where you come in. We need to know when this is happening in your community. We've got lawyers that have gone to work on this already. Demand letter has been sent out to the school district. We just got another case resolved involving a student in a cross. Again, you think, in this day and time, are those issues? But yes, they are. But Harry, you said this runs very deep ideologically.
Absolutely. And so one of the books that explains this movement, and it's a contemporary book, it's a book by Tara Isabella Burton. The book is entitled Strange Rites, New Religions for a Godless World. And I think the focus is on coming up with spirit beings that are in contrast with a Judeo-Christian conception. And many teachers are pushing this initiative. Many teachers believe, for instance, that Satan is an appropriate God figure. Why? Because they believe that Satanism is more inclusive, more tolerant than Christianity, for instance. And this is literally being pushed in our schools and is being pushed in academic institutions. And a lot of this originated in the mind of Karl Marx almost 200 years ago.
This is why you fight back. You know, I'm thinking about the issues we discussed today on the broadcast. When, you know, we start with the pro-lifers we're representing in Baltimore that were beaten brutally. And we're representing them and we'll get justice. Then I talk about pro-lifers in California that uncover the criminal activity, the activity of selling body parts, the immoral activity of selling body parts by Planned Parenthood. And who gets in trouble? Not the individuals that were selling the body parts. No. The individuals who uncovered that Planned Parenthood and affiliates were selling body parts. That's who has to go to court and defend themselves. And we're now at the Supreme Court of the United States. I'm holding the cert petition in my hand. That's also your American Center for Law and Justice. Then we talk about China and what they're doing at the UN. We're there. Then Ohio and students being harassed or being told they must worship idols and make idols and give them spiritual powers. And your ACLJ is there for all of it. Support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice. You do that by joining us, ACLJ.org. Great information. You follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, wherever Truth, wherever you're getting your social media feeds, we encourage you to do that. But again, support the work of the ACLJ at ACLJ.org. Can I make a shout out to the band Styx? The band Styx, our band does a tune called Fooling Yourself. And the band Styx actually reposted that to their Facebook and Twitter pages. Kind of made my week. So we appreciate Styx, obviously. We appreciate they did it. All right, folks. More information tomorrow, ACLJ.org.